for the second time in the Torah in this week's Parsha, early in Parsha Shmini, but again it's repeated in Sefer Devarim in this week's Parsha. We have a discussion regarding kosher and non-kosher animals, and within that discussion there's a discussion and a quick comment in the Torah about eating bugs. We're not allowed to eat bugs, everybody knows that, and that's clear. We know that we check for bugs, as the Torah would require us to. And what we want to discuss is one small topic within the much more complicated realm of bugs and eating bugs and vegetables and fruits and things like that, and that is this issue. If we know and we take for granted, we assume that certainly there are types of fruits that have a high propensity towards having bugs in them, and they are difficult to check. You can go and see all these very interesting videos on the OU website, on the CRC, the Chafkei, all the websites. They'll show you all the delicious bugs that are found in the strawberries and different things that they sell in the stores. They're all there. You don't need a magnifying glass. You don't need a microscope. All the bugs are there. They're in plain sight. You just have to, if you look and you pay attention, you'll see them. That's why we check. It's something that makes sense. And raspberries are even worse, right? How many Jewish homes don't have raspberries? Because we know that inside all the different crevices and all the different pieces inside the raspberries and the blackberries, there are different types of bugs there. And if that's the case, we know that there are fruits that carry high percentages of infestations when it comes to bugs and things like that, thrips, all these different types of delicious things. So if that is the case, why is it that you can have a yogurt, you can have a smoothie, a jelly, a jam, whatever you want to call it, from a non-Jewish company or a Jewish company, and it is made of strawberries, and it is made of raspberries, and all these delicious fruits. And how is that okay? What's happening from telling me that I have to make sure I check the strawberries, or I shouldn't even buy raspberries, to being allowed to bring that product in a different form into our house? So we want to discuss that specific question, to what's happening between A and between B, and at the end of the day, why it is okay and why the kosher organizations do give hechshem to these products that you would think, or if you think about it, well, how come I have to check a strawberry, but I have a whole bottle here of strawberries that mashed up, and that's okay. Just to make the question even stronger, I just want to read, I forgot which website this is from, but I took from one of the websites the protocols. If one decides they want to have raspberries, and what would be the best way to check raspberries? And you'll see that there's definitely not some mashkiach standing, you know, in the pollen or a jelly factory or whatever it is, whoever makes the jelly or the jams, or the yogurt company sitting there and checking the raspberries doing the following thing. And they say as follows. There's three types of raspberries: black, golden, and red. The red is the most available, and they have heavy infestation of small mites and thrips, and they can be nestled on the surface, inside the cavities of the raspberries, all these different types of issues. And they're often extremely infested. And this must be from the OU, because it says, currently, fresh raspberries and blackberries are not permitted in OU-certified catering facilities and restaurants. You can't get them. You will not find fresh raspberries in any restaurant's catering service under the OU. And what should the inspection look like? Due to the very delicate nature of raspberries, they cannot be placed in water because you'll ruin the raspberry, nor can they be extensively handled, and therefore they recommend the following procedure. You should take a white cloth or a sheet, white freezer paper, over a light box, and then you should drop the raspberries on the surface. Now, I don't know why, if they're so delicate, you can't handle them, you can drop them, but whatever. You should drop them. What the dropping does is that it rustles it enough that anything that's living inside will peek out to say hello to you. And two or more insects are found, then the whole pint of berries should be considered infested. That's how many bugs are inside the raspberries. If you find two raspberries in the whole pint, the whole thing has to be gotten rid of. There's no washing procedure that could possibly do anything here. And after dropping the berries, there's no insects found. The berries should be visually inspected one by one, paying attention to the cavity. What do I want to bring out by this wonderful description? That clearly nobody in the yogurt or the smoothie or the jelly factory is doing this, because that would be ridiculous. So with all this in mind, if there's such difficulty in so many fruits, then how is it okay at the end of the day to serve them in these different forms? So for this, we're going to bring four reasons together. This, now, what I'm about to say is my perspective. I'm not speaking for any kosher organization. The kosher organizations will provide the reality, the metzias of what's going on in the factories and things like that. We'll take from different places for that. But the halacha and the lumdus is coming from me. So I'm not speaking for any particular organization that certifies any food. So we need to know a few things as follows. The first thing is that there's something called rov, there's a miut hamatzoi, and there's something called a miut shein hamatzoi. It goes as follows. If there is a 50% chance, or 50% of the product has insects in it, meaning if I have two raspberries and one raspberry, if I have three raspberries and two of the raspberries have insects, two of the raspberries have insects, then I assume that the third one also does. That's considered a rov, according to the Torah, majority rules, and therefore nothing can be eaten. It is considered infestation, and the majority is considered to be prohibited, as well, even the minority that you didn't check is considered to be prohibited because the majority contains bugs. That's clear according to the Torah. Then there's something called a miut hamatzi. A miut hamatzi means that there's a small percentage that is considered significant that midrabanan, according to the rabbis, we're worried about and you have to check. We can't say it's usser because there's such a percentage, because the Torah says, you know, we're going to follow the majority. But the rabbanim said, if there's such a percentage, and we're going to say that percentage is 10%, if you check 10%, and you find that if you check the batch, you check 10% of the batch, and 10% is finds bugs, so then if with that amount you have to check each one to make sure nothing is there. And then there's something called a miut she'eino matzei. A miut she'eino matzei means that there's a less than 10%. If there's less than 10% of the batch or whatever the fruit is, so you can assume that every one that you're eating does not contain the bug. You can assume that where the percentages are in my favor, that there's probably not a bug with what I'm eating, and there's no reason to check. Those are the different levels. Where do we get this concept from, of checking if there's a significant percentage? This is the Mishnah, the Gemara Msachim and Daf Dalet. The Gemara there says that if you are renting a place for Pesach, right, and you get to the hotel Erev Pesach, the night before Pesach, and you don't know if it was checked, you don't know if the landlord who left you this place for Pesach checked it or not, I have a suffix. I have a doubt if I can have to check this place again. So the Gemara says, just ask the guy, the landlord. And the Gemara answers, you can't ask him. He went away. He's not around anymore. So what do we see from the Gemara? The Gemara assumes, if you have a chazaka, if you have a reliable assumption that there's a status quo, don't rely on the chazaka. Don't rely on the status quo if you can check it. Don't rely on percentages if there's a way to check the room. If I can check the room to make sure there's no chametz in the room, don't assume that it was checked, because it's something I can easily verify myself. That's what the Gemara says. The Ramban holds as follows, based on this Gemara, that whenever there's a miut she'enu matzoi, there's such a small percentage of a possibility, you can rely on the rov and assume you don't have to check. Says the Ramban, if there's a miut hamatzoi, if there's a significant chance of something, then you have to check. And this is the language of the Ramban, and this is how we pass on Shulchan Aruch. Okay? And he says, this is midrabanan. Now, what's the definition of a miut hamatzoi? Where do I get the idea from that there's a certain amount that's less than 50% that I have to be worried about to check? So the Ramban in Chulin cites a medrash. The medrash says that Adam HaRishon couldn't eat from the Eitz Hadas in Erev Shabbos, but he would have been able to eat it on Shabbos. If Adam would have waited till Shabbos, he could have partaken of the tree. But he didn't wait. He couldn't wait a few hours, and therefore, you know, literally the rest is history. Right? So if he would have waited, though, it would have been fine. So the Medrash says that Adam would have been embarrassed because the Jewish people wait before they consume foods. Right? Adam couldn't wait for to look at his food. But his grandchildren, the Jewish people, we are so careful that we check and we wait before we eat foods. So what's the example of the Medrash says? That the Jewish people check before they do something? We check the lungs of the animal. That's what the Medrash says. We check the lungs of the animal to make sure it's permissible before we partake of the food. Right? This is what makes something, you know, glatz kosher, if the animal's glatz kosher. So the Ramban asks a question on the Medrash. Listen to the Ramban's question. He says that we are only bodek, why are we only bodek the lungs of the animal? If an animal has tens and tens of possible issues with it, right? There could be so many possible issues with the animal. Why do we only check the lungs? What's it about the lungs that we're so concerned about, but everything else we don't check? So the Ramban says that the lungs contain trephos that rise to the level of mir hamatzoi. There's such a percentage of the lungs going wrong that we check those. The other things are very uncommon they would happen, unless you know for sure they happen. The lungs contain this mir hamatzoi, the significant chance of something happening. It's not the majority. 51% of cows don't have problems with their lungs, but there's some number that's not too small, but not more than 50%, that we're concerned about when it comes to checking the lungs of the animal. So he explains the lungs contain this issue. So too, says the Ramban, when it comes to bugs and when it comes to shatnas, you only have to check if there's a mir hamatzoi, if there's a percentage that's significant enough. How much is this mir hamatzoi? What's this number? So we said it's 10%. This is based on a tshuva, the Mishkan of Yaakov, and this is what most of the poskim accept. I think Rav Asher Weiss doesn't like that number, but it's 10%. And that's the number that all the kashrus organizations use. If you can show me that there's bugs 10% of the time in the fruit that you eat, then you have to check it. If you can show me that bugs appear less than 10% of the time, go ahead. You don't have to check it. You can rely on the majority. It's insignificant. Go ahead and eat the fruit. Now that's the principles we're playing with right now. We're clear? There's 50%. It's never good. That's a chazak. It's muchzak. We know for sure there's going to be a bug in there. There's above 10%, but not 50%. You have to check. And less than 10%, miyachena matzoi, go to town, have a fruit salad, whatever you want.
Is that 10% in a natural state or after you buy it? For example, you buy it used to be.
Yeah. So the kashrus organizations have their calculations of how they do it. I'm not, I don't know that for sure. I don't know what the process is. And also there's discussions about 10% of what? The batch that comes into the store,
whatever.
Exactly. So those things we'll leave for not now. So let's turn to purees. Right? You take a fruit, you go to the store, you buy fruit, or you buy raspberries, and you put them in the blender. What's wrong with that? So look in the Shulchan Aruch here in your Adaya Pei Dalad Siftes. The Shulchan Aruch says, Avar Bishal Toch Shneimasar Chodesh, you had the fruit for 12 months. That's a different discussion for now. Why 12 months? Below Bedika, you didn't check it. Im Yachol Livdok Bodek. If you went and cooked the fruit, you went and cooked the thing, and you can now check to see if there's bugs in there, so check to make sure there's nothing wrong in there. Okay? Vim Lav, if you can't check, Mutter, the food is now Mutter, that it's been cooked. Vim Nimsuk Tsas Bikadera, Mashlichem Ochal Ashar, and you can eat the rest, it's perfectly fine. This is what the Shulchan Aruch says. You can cook the vegetables or the fruits that require bedika without first checking them. And the fruits or the vegetables can no longer be checked. They're mutter. And he says, even if you find something in the pot, right, you throw it out, eat what remains, because every fruit contains what? It's 60 times more than the bug, right? You can always assume that it's about the lashishim. We know that if something is 60 times more than the prohibited item, it's mutter. In most cases, the bug is going to be fewer than 60 times the fruit. So if it was all cooked together, the bugs are going to be butzel b'shishim inside.
Good.
We'll have to discuss that. Comes the Shach. The Shach makes the following point there in Sifkat and Chavtes. It's very small words, but I'll tell you what he says. The Shach quotes a Rashba. He doesn't say it's the Rashba, but this is the famous sfeik of the Rashba. A double suffix. What's the double suffix? And he says that if it's possible to check, you have to check. And if you can't check, then it's mutter. So he gives an example of the wolf comes and steals the stomach from the animal. Now you can't check the animal anymore because there's no stomach. So the Rashi makes the following statement. Suffolk, the first suffolk is perhaps this fruit, perhaps this strawberry had no bugs in it. Okay? Maybe the strawberries that are in my puree don't have any bugs in it. That's the first doubt. Is that enough to allow you to drink it? No, because that's only one suffolk. The second suffolk is, even if there were insects in my puree, maybe the insects were nisrasik. Maybe they fell apart. They're not a birya anymore. Maybe they were cooked and the heat and the moving around caused the insect to fall apart, to dissolve, and therefore it's not considered whole anymore. And I won't be eating a whole thing, and it all got dissolved into the food through the cooking. These two sfeikos together, these two doubts together, are called the sfeik of the Rashba. Two doubts create a heter, and therefore, if you cook it, says the Shach, it should be fine. Now, the Isser Behetra, with the Shach quotes as well, writes that this is only if the fruit is not huchzik betolayim. That's not going to work for a vegetable that has a more than 50% chance of having a bug in it, because there's no suffix anymore. It's not a doubt. There's certainly going to be bugs in there. So it has to be something that doesn't have an infestation of 50%. An example of that would probably be like broccoli. Okay? Broccoli almost always is going to have something in there. You can't ground up the broccoli without checking it or doing something about it or washing it properly. You can't take broccoli straight from the ground without washing it properly to deal with it and then grind it up and hope for the best, because there's definitely going to be something of significance in there. This fake of the Rashi, as we said, doesn't apply in something where there's muslim. So that's going to be the first hetter we need, right? When it comes to our jellies and our jams and our fruit smoothies, the first thing we need to know is the Rashba. Because the Rashba is going to say, you have a suffix. Maybe there's no bugs in here. And even if there are bugs in there, maybe they've all been crushed and taken care of. Okay? Now, the Mishnah in Chulin says that the Gid Hanasha was cooked with the permissible parts of the rest of the animal's leg. Okay? So if we recognize the Gid Hanasha, you should remove it. And all the things are going to be mutter as well, right? But if you can't recognize the Gid Hanasha, if it all got mixed in, you made a chalent with Gid Hanasha and the animal's leg, and it all got mixed around, so the Gemara says the whole thing's going to be usser. So the Gemara asks, why don't we say that the Gid Hanasha is batel barov, right? Let's say I take a whole side of an animal, I cook it in a big stew, and the Gid Hanasha, the sciatic nerve, should be batel barov. Why not? There's 99% of it, more than 60% of it is going to be kosher meat, and there's some Gid Hanasha floating around in there. Why shouldn't it be batel barov? So the Gemara answers, it is a birya. What's a birya? A birya is a complete entity. Something that's a complete entity, a unit on its own, is never batel. Why is it never batel? How come it can't be nullified? So Rabbi Soloveitchik said that it's like a chaticha harui lehiskabed. It's considered a significant thing. If something is whole entirely, you can't nullify it because it's its own unit. I can't say it's not significant. There's a whole Gid Hanasha in my cholent. How could I say that's not significant? And this is the concept of birya. This is a din derabbanan, a rabbinic law that we don't say a complete entity is nullified if it's not broken up. So look in the Shulchan Aruch over here. This is Sayyid al-Halach and Shulchan Aruch in Yardin and Simon Kuf. Birya, dahainu kagon. What's a birya? What's the example the Shulchan Aruch gives? Namala, an ant. Oof tame, an entire chicken that's not kosher. Gid hanasha, avrim min hachai. Beitz sheish ba'efroach, an egg that has a chick in it. Complete units, things that aren't broken up. So the Shulchan Aruch says these things are never batal. And the Shulchan Aruch goes on to give a criteria for what is a birya. It has to have been something that was alive. Okay? It has to have been something that was usher from the time it was created. It has to be something that if you cut it up, it will be called something else. It will take on a different name. And it must be whole. So we have a rule that a birya is not batal. We only say this regarding a complete birya, says the Shulchan Aruch.
Well, Gid Hanasha is like everything else besides Gid Hanasha is like a complete living being.
The Gid Hanasha, we view it as the nerve itself, meaning this is one unit on its own. We view it
as opposed to the birya being a whole.
Correct, correct. Yeah. In this case, we view it as one unit on its own. So the Shulchan Aruch
said just half. There's another side.
Of what?
Every animal has two Gid Hanasha.
Correct.
So this is half.
Correct. We only care about one. I don't want to get caught up on Gid Hanasha. One Gid Hanasha on its own is considered a birya, a significant item on its own. The Shulchan Aruch says, if I take that birya and I chop it up, it's not considered whole anymore. It's not considered significant. And therefore, it could potentially be batel. Therefore, even though the bug might be an Isser d'Oraisa, nevertheless, once I chop it up, it's not considered a birya, it's not considered something significant, and therefore it is batel. Now, many achronim say that cooking is not enough to remove the status of the bug. If I just took strawberries or raspberries, and I cooked it in a pot, and that was it, I didn't touch them, poured sugar in, whatever it is else you need, that wouldn't be enough. You also have to agitate it. If you only cook and don't agitate it, according to many achronim, you cannot assume that the bugs have been broken up, that there was something that was going to ruin them in there. Fine. So those are the first 2 points, the first point and a half. Now, next. So the jams, so jellies, things like that, are a common example of where the sfeik of the rash from the Shulchan Aruch will apply, right? The jams are made by cooking the mashed fruit in sugar water. It involves agitation. And the fruits are not so infested that they're hooked up into lime. You will never find a jam or a jelly or a yogurt that's made with a fruit that has a more than 50% chance of a bug. They wouldn't never, the kashrut organizations would never give a hechsher for that, because the sfeik of the rashba won't apply, because there's a more than 50% chance, and therefore there would be no doubt. Even certain
a bug in the whole. See, it seems like the way they do it, I may be wrong, that they make, let's say, all the strawberries, make the paste, over. So where's that 50% to be in the amount that goes in your yogurt thing, or in part of the whole thing they're producing?
Well, it doesn't matter. It's Basel Barov. It's Basel Barov. That's the difference than putting
in. I think it's 50% of finding a bug there. It's always going to be Basel Barov.
Yeah, meaning if you have a fruit that has a 50% chance of finding a bug in it, more than 50% chance of finding a bug in it, you can't use the sfeik of the rashba, because you can't say that there's a doubt that there's no bug in here, because the majority would tell you there is a bug in here. So it has to be fruits that cannot have such an infestation. It has to be a low level of having bugs. Even raspberries don't have a 50% chance of having.
Just raspberries a unit, then, you're saying that?
I guess so. I don't know how they divide it up, but whatever they're saying is the raspberries, the blackberries, which at times might be considered huchzibik tolayim, so at that, by the time they're made into jams, they're not huchzak anymore. By the time they get there and they're washed and they're added to all those things, by the time they're getting to the time they make the jam, they break it down, we don't consider it to have a chazaka anymore as well. Okay, now, one is not allowed to create a sfeik on their own. This is issue number two. We have a concept in halacha of ein mevatlin iser lechatchila. Can I go and take a little bit of milk and purposely drop it into my challenge, even though it's less than 60? No, you can't do that. Ein mevatlin iser lechatchila. So how can we go and do this? I know that, what's the jelly company's name?
Palinor.
Or whatever. I know that Palinors, they're going to go and grind up the raspberries to make their jelly. Isn't that being mevatel, nullifying the Isra l'chadchila from the outset? So there's a tshuvas of the Shiva Sion in Simon Mem Hei, and again in Simon Ayin Beis. And he says, I didn't bring it over here, it's a long tshuva. He says that one's kavana is not to be mevatel the Isra, but rather it's the necessary procedure that one would perform anyways, then that's not being mevatel Isra l'chadchila. When the company grinds up the raspberries or the strawberries to make the jelly, is there kavana, oh, we're now going to grind up bugs, so therefore it's not going to be a problem for the Jewish people to eat anymore? No, they care less. It's how you make jelly. That's not being mevatel Israel chadchila. That's called making jelly. That's what you do. You cook it and you grind and you mash it, and that's what happens at the end of the day. And he cites this based on a Shulchan Aruch in Pei Dalad Yadal. Look at the Shulchan Aruch in Pei Dalad Yadal. He says, Chitim metulayim mutter l'tachanein v'hu shirakeid hakemach l'or hayom. The Shulchan Aruch permits grinding up infested wheat to produce flour. Why? Because the way you make a flour is by grinding grain. It's not being mevatel isra l'chadchila. It's called grinding grain, wheat, into flour. That is the process. And there too, the Taz says that it's not a problem being mevatel iser, since the kavanah in grinding the wheat is only to produce the flour, and therefore the grinding of the insects is incidental. What's going on? And even if there was no talayim, that's still how you would make wheat, right? Even if there was no bugs in the strawberries, you would still make strawberry jam the same way, regardless or not if there was anything else going on inside of them. This is part of the business. This is the way the companies make the jam. And they would do the same thing regardless if it was for Jews or non-Jews, whatever it is. However, that means individuals, though, have a problem. You can't go and say that I'm going to be allowed to go and cook the fruit without first checking them, because it probably is likely that for a Jew, part of their intention is to be mevatel isra l'chadchila. Meaning if you go and pick strawberries from the batch, from the patch, and you now want to make strawberry jam, you have to check. Because why would you not check?
You have the ability to check.
So you have to check. You can't say ein mevatel sachil because you know you want to have this jam. It's not a company making the jam for thousands of people. It's you making it for yourself. You yourself would have to check in such a case. Now, one more chiv is brought by the Taz. And the Taz says it has to be, this is in Simon Sadi Tes, but I brought the Aruch HaShulchan that says the same thing, that it has to be i'efshar b'inyan acher. There can be no other practical way to remove the bugs. There can be no other way to do it. Ha, says the Aruch HaShulchan, de'im mevalin isser l'chadchila, zeu shekamanasu levata l'isser. You can't nullify prohibited things l'chadchila, if that's your kavana. Aval ein kavanasu l'kach, de kavanasu hu l'takena maichel. The Evshar Binyan Acher, and there's no other way to do it, so then we would allow it as well. And this is also part of the process. The companies are not going to sit there and check strawberries and check raspberries. This is what they do.
It's not exactly like they add the milk to the... Because then you create the iso.
Yeah.
It's not mevatel iso, you create the iso when you pour milk to...
So you want to say it's even better?
It's different.
It's different. I hear it. It's different. So at the end of the day, I think we can say there are four reasons why strawberry jams, jellies, things like that should be fine. I think they are that the level of infestation is only amir hamatzoi, or at worst a safek. It's only going to work with fruits that have a lower percentage of having bugs. The cooking is done with agitation, and that creates the safek of the rashba. Then there's no kavana to be mevatel the bugs when you cook them. And finally, there's really no other way to get the bugs out. And all these things together, I think, would create a heter in this situation. Fine. That's when it comes to the purees. They say that the companies are allowed to grind food to create purees, provided the puree is fine enough to ensure the bugs are nisrasik, or that they're ground up. So they said that thrips range in size certain types of millimeters, and in general, a screen of a certain size is required to create the suffix. And the Shach says that even grinding to a size that will certainly grind up the bugs is only permitted if there's only a chashash of talayim, but not if we know for sure, right? Again, so it has to be that it has to be something that the bugs, there's no chazak of the bugs are there, because that would ensure that the bugs are going to remain inside the mixture as well. So what do we do with fruit that is huchzak b'tolayim, like raspberries? So it's a little bit complicated. So essentially, I think it has to do with this Shulchan Aruch on the bottom. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Pei Dal Yud Gimel, Devash shenaflu bo nimalim, chamemenu ad shiyeh nitach v'yimemenu. If you have honey, so honey is going to have bugs in it, because it's coming from the beehive. So the Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to cook the honey to filter out the pieces of the bugs. So the Shuvas Rabbi Yekiva Eger says that since the intention of squeezing the fruit is to ultimately remove the bugs, even though inevitably some of the taste of the bugs is going to end up in the juice, it's still considered ein kavanas levatel. The intention is to take the juice out of the bug, so it could be in this case as well, even if there's a chazakah, based on this, even though my intention is not for it, even in the case of a chazakah, there might be room. So I just want to quote two other things and then want to bring it together. There's a volume that's put out called Halachically Speaking by one of the mashkichim, one of the kashrus supervisors for the Chaf Kei. So he writes the following thing about jams that are not pureed and about frozen produce. He says, many yogurts are flavored with pieces of fruit that are not pureed. We cannot apply the heter of a birya being crushed, since there might be insects in that part of the fruit, right? If you buy a jam that has thick pieces of strawberries or raspberries, so the same issue is relevant to jam, since the fruit is not pureed. However, by the time the produce reaches the company which makes the jam, it is not mukhsak, we don't assume there's a bug there, since the fruit has been washed, and therefore, even raspberries can be made into jams without being pureed, because it's a mir hamatsoi. And then he says that the OU will not certify a jam that contains fruit that is mukhsak. You won't find an OU hechsher on a fruit that has a more than 50% chance of a bug being there. They won't certify such things. I guess other kosher organizations will rely on other heterim, but he says the OU won't do that.
What was he Does it, because in the jam, it's 50, you know, there's a, I don't know, maybe there's like a 50 piece, there is more than 50 chance of one of them has a bug, or is each, when you decide at each
I think it has to do again with the Rashba. You can't apply the heter of the Rashba if I know that there is
no. But each one,
one
you don't know.
Again, then I guess you have to ask the kashronization is what their kashron is. Then he makes a comment about frozen produce. He says that frozen strawberries and raspberries can be checked, but it's more difficult to check for insects. Even if a product has many insects in the field, they are not muchzak. There's no chazak. There are bugs there by the time they reach the consumer, especially since frozen strawberries are washed before they are frozen. Therefore, frozen strawberries are generally considered a miut she'enu matzah. It's considered even less than the 10% by the time it gets, and that's why we're more lenient when it comes to frozen fruits, because of all the processing that goes on before it gets to the door. So we'll say the following thing. Smoothies, it would certainly say that we can apply the Sfeik Seik of the Rashba, like we said before, and it's no issue of being Mavasa Isser. Jams, as we said, when we cook the strawberries with other ingredients, he writes that they only pretty much use frozen strawberries in those cases. When it comes to those jams, even what they tell you, it's not fresh in the field. They're using frozen strawberries to make those jams, and therefore, everything gets downgraded even more, and we can be lenient in those cases, and the Sfeik Seik of the Rashba can apply. And for yogurts, frozen strawberries are used as well, and we establish that frozen strawberries are a miyachar nematsoi, it's not considered significant, and therefore you can buy these strawberries. So, it comes out at the end of the day, for the smoothies, the jams, the jellies, and the yogurts, that the halacha would permit them, based on these reasons combined. Yeah.
I'm more questioning now flour. If you know that's infested grain,
yeah.
All you're doing is grinding it up. That's not cooked, that's not anything.
Yeah.
How can you use flour?
So I think that we don't assume in America that there are infestations. I think in Israel there are bigger issues with that. That's why they're more concerned about these in Israel.
Why is flour? Why is flour? Don't we assume flour?